In this lesson, we're going to understand how sound is implemented in the latest version of Java, which is JDK 1.3. Sound as a feature was provided in the earlier versions of Java. However, the control was very primitive. It was observed that there was a need for greater control, and therefore Sun, along with IBM currently and Intel in the past, has come up with a framework called Java Media Framework. And part of the media framework, they implemented both sound and audio, video, and graphics. As it turned out, the audio part was mature enough, or the sound part was mature enough, to be migrated to the core API, which is Java API. And so what we're going to look at in this lecture is to understand how this sound API has been implemented. What does it mean for you as a programmer in terms of how do you invoke the various routines and what they mean? We're going to look at two possible ways of playing audio. One is playing audio in memory, and the other one is streaming audio. We're also going to talk about MIDI. We already looked at how MIDI devices work. We are now going to try and understand how MIDI is being integrated into the sound API. The crux of the material for this particular lecture is from chapter 18 of the Beginning Java book by Ivor Houghton. And I will be referring to the examples from this chapter extensively. Therefore, I provide a link to the examples on the website. In order to first understand what Java API provides in terms of sound, we will first try and understand what are the formats that are supported. For example, the formats that are supported in the current version are .au, or sometimes referred to as .snd. Usually stores 8-bit MuLaw encoded samples. You might recall that MuLaw encoding is a logarithmic scale encoding of audio samples. However, this can also store 8 to 16-bit linear samples. If you did not use a logarithmic scale and you used a linear scale, then we can go from 8 to 16 bits resolution. The other format that's supported is a .AIF format. This usually stores 8 or 16-bit linear encoded samples. The .WAV format can store 8 to 16-bit samples using both linear and MuLaw encoding. And lastly, MIDI format, which follows the MIDI data format standard. It is important to note that the content of the file is not dictated so much by the extension of the file and more by the content within the header of the file. For example, in order to recognize that a file is a .au file, traditionally people think that, well, if I name the file a .au, it has to be an audio file, .au file. Well, that's not how Java figures out what the content of a file is. Java figures it out by looking at the header of the file, which is the first few bytes inside the file explain what the content of the file is. For example, a .au would have a specific byte at the beginning that explains that it's a .au file, followed by what coding is being used, whether it's an 8-bit MuLaw or a 16 or 8-bit linear encoding. So one has to take the extensions of files with a grain of salt. Just because some file is named with an extension, it doesn't mean that it contains content which is of that particular type. The other preliminaries we're going to look at is to understand what a sound sample is or what sound frames are. A sample frame or sound sample is is something that is captured at a particular instant in time. So a sample frame stores all the samples taken at an instant of time. Usually, we take one sample at any instant in time. However, there are codings where we take multiple samples. For example, when we have stereo coding, we would have multiple samples at the same instant of time, and these are called multiple channels. So the number of bytes in a frame is the number of bytes in a sample times the number of channels. So if you had stereo coding, then you would have two channels, and so the sample frame would have twice the amount of bytes as a single sample. The other feature that characterizes sound is frame rate. The frame rate decides the number of frames per second of sound. So now we're not just talking about an instant in time where we take a sample, but if we were to take a second of the sound and see how many samples or how many frames are within that second of sound, that would give us the frame rate. In most cases, the frame rate is same as the sample rate. However, in compressed media, when sound is compressed, different samples have different sizes, and the frame rate will be less than the sample rate. Compressed media is something that we're going to look at later in this course, but for now it is sufficient to understand that in compressed sound the frame rate will be less than the sample rate. Before we delve into the API of Java Sound, let's first try to see what how sound works in the current version or the earlier versions of Java. That is, it is primarily through the applet or japlet class that is in the Java API. Here's an example. Now we just call it plate.java. By the way, this example is available on the website as code. You would notice that from this code, I've highlighted a few lines which actually do the core of the work concerning playing off an audio. So what we're going to do in this example is we're going to play a given audio file using a Java program. As a matter of fact, this is a Java applet. So let's see how the mechanism proceeds. Well, it all happens through the use of a entity called an audio clip. Within japlet, we have a routine called getAudioClip. This is a method in applet, which in turn happens to be inherited by japlet. So we can call it within this program because our program, which says play it, extends japlet. So if you want to see the sequence, play it extends japlet. Japlet in turn extends applet, and applet contains a get audio clip routine in it. So what exactly does get audio clip do? Well, get audio clip in the usage that we have shown here, it takes a file that you want to play and it converts it into what we call as a clip. So here we say get audio clip, get document base, comma file name. So this would get where the path to the file, followed by the file itself, follow the path to the file, get the file, and convert it into a clip or create a clip out of it, and it would be available for us to manipulate. So at this point, you have the audio, all you have to do is manipulate it. And in our case, we are using the routine clip.loop and clip.stop. The clip.loop is as a matter of fact similar to another routine called clip.play, and the play routine just plays the audio once and that's the end of it, whereas the clip.loop will play the audio and then continue to loop on the audio. So it would finish the whole audio, come back to the beginning and start playing it again until you stop playing the clip. So in a nutshell, what you see in this code is in the init routine of the applet, we create a clip and we set up a button which is a J button, and the J button would have a string display within it called play. And what would happen is the instant the user presses the button, the action listener would be invoked. And so we would execute the routine action performed. And in the action performed, I would get the command. If it equals play, then I would loop through the audio. And when I'm looping through the audio, I would set the text to be stop. And then it continues to loop. And if at some point the user presses stop, then the action performed is again invoked. And in this case, we stop the clip and we set the text back to play, and this continues till the applet is killed. So in a nutshell, what you can infer from this example is that playing audio in the case of an applet is very, very simple. It involves just three steps. You get a clip, you loop through it or play it, and when you're done, you stop it. So that's as simple as it gets. Unfortunately, with this simplicity, you also have this problem where it is very, very primitive. That is, there is not much control one can get on the clip. For example, if the audio is of a particular format which your program cannot manipulate, then you wouldn't be able to convert it to another format. We would like to have more control whereby if I have an audio file and currently my system doesn't support it, then I would like to convert it to a format where it can be supported and therefore be able to play it. And as you will see, there are other reasons also that require a more sophisticated API. One other thing that I would like to point out in this example is the get audio clip routine that is there in the applet class. It's an overloaded routine, so there are two versions of it. The version that I'm showing you here is getting it creating a clip from a file. The more general version is capable of getting the clip from any given URL. So you can make a clip out of any file anywhere in the web and play it using this simple applet. Well, we've seen how we can implement sound in the case of applet. Unfortunately, we notice that it's not always the case that we write applets. There are several times that we write applications. For those of you who are not clear on the difference between an applet and an application, in a nutshell, an applet is something that works within a browser or a special applet viewer, whereas an application can run just like any other application in Windows or Unix. You just run it using the application driver, which is Java. You just say Java application and that would run it. So both have their advantages and disadvantages, and I will not get into the specifics of those. However, if one wants to incorporate sound in the earlier versions of Java, if one wanted to incorporate sound into applications, then it was still possible because of an interesting fact. Because though the audio clip or get audio clip routine is implemented in the applet class, there's another routine in the applet class which is a static method. By the way, a static method is a method which belongs to a class, and therefore you do not have to have an instance of that class to invoke that method. So the good thing that this gives us is that I can get to this new audio clip method, which is part of the applet class, though I'm not implementing or though I'm not having an instance of the applet. So you would write an application, and in the application you would say applet dot new audio clip, and you would get a new audio clip. And by the way, the new audio clip takes a file or a URL as input. So you'd say applet.newaudioclip, give the URL, and get the clip. And once I get the clip, I can do a clip.play, clip.loop, and do a clip.stop, and I'm done with it. So if you want an example of this, there is an example in the examples directory called playsounds.java, which shows exactly what I'm trying to get at. Now let's try to look at the Java Sound API. I hope I've convinced you that there is a need for more than what the primitive sound features that were provided in the earlier versions of Java. So current versions, current being Java 1.3, by the time you will be listening to this, there's probably going to be other versions, but this concept that I'm putting forward in this lecture will apply even to later versions of Java. So most of the time when we use the implement sound in our programs, most of the time you will want to access a number of physical or simulated sound resources in your system that you will use to record, play, or process sample sound data. For example, you might want to access the microphone on your machine to record data. You might want to access a speaker on your machine to play audio data. As a matter of fact, you might want to access some software devices that call like mixers and synthesizers and sequencers that are in your system that you would like to get a handle on, and you would like to access them for either, as I said, to read data from them, sound data from them, or to write sound sample sound data to them. So the way the Sound API works is it identifies system resources. System resources are resources on the system like audio pertaining to audio that you can get a handle on, and you can use them and manipulate them. So an audio line is any resource that is a source or destination of sample sound data. Audio lines are generally associated with a device called a mixer. The mixer receives input from one or more audio lines called source data lines and outputs the results of combining the input to an output line called a target data line. We can gain access to an audio line belonging to a mixer via the mixer itself, or directly without reference to the mixer with which it is associated. So in the figure that you see, what we have is we have a mixer which has source data lines that are feeding input to it, and there are target data lines where the mixer outputs sound data. So we can either access these lines through the mixer, or we can access them directly. Please note that a line is an abstract concept. So one kind of line can correspond to different physical resources at different times. There's another point that I would like to clarify here, which is in this particular case, when I talk about mixers, the source data lines are typically, as I said, there's probably things like microphones, physical resources, or they could be files, or more generally, they could be URLs. So, and there's another point to understand here. The terminology of source data and target data lines is looking at source and target from the perspective of the mixer and not from the programmer. Because when the programmer perceives sound, you would say, well, if you're reading sound from a file, then the file would be a source data line for you, and the target data line would probably be the speaker on your machine. Whereas for the mixer, a source data line is a source for the mixer and not the source for you. Actually, you write to it. So you write, the fact that you're writing to a speaker means that it's the source data line for the mixer, but it's for you. It's something that you write to. And a target data line is the output for a mixer, and you don't read from it. I'm sorry, you don't write to it, you read from it. So once again, to clarify this terminology, The source data line is a source for the mixer and not for you. Similarly, the target data line is the output from the mixer, and it's not the output for you. You actually read from it. So in a sense, the terms get swapped in terms of their meaning because you write to a source data line and you read from a target data line. The Java Sound API consists of four packages. The four packages are javax.sound.sample, javax.sound.media, javax.sound.sample.spi, and javax.sound.sample.midi. As far as we are concerned, and for most programmers, the first two packages are relevant. The second two packages that we see here, these would be used by people who are going to write new devices. So, for example, if currently there are only certain devices that are supported by the Java API, if somebody were trying to implement a new device, audio device, be it a new microphone technology or a new speaker technology, then they would mess with the bottom two packages. But for you and for most programmers, it's only the sound.sample and the sound.midi packages that are relevant. Let's try to understand what are the basic building blocks of the API. As it turns out, the API gives us a couple of classes which are pretty powerful in terms of what they accomplish. One is the audio system class, and the other is an audio stream input class. Just to understand what the relevance of these classes is, first I would like to point out something, which is that you can't use a constructor to create an object encapsulating a particular physical resource, such as a line or a mixer. As it turns out, physical resources on the system are only one instance of each. Therefore, in my program, if I try to create an instance of it, which means that I'm creating a new instance of this object, well, it turns out that there's only one instance of a resource. So if you have only one microphone in your program, you cannot create an instance of the microphone because there's already only one instance and the system owns that resource. All you do is you get a handle, you get a link to that resource, and you don't create a copy or create an instance of it. So the reason this mechanism is followed is so that if you have a program which is using the microphone by getting a handle on it, then some other program should also be able to read from the microphone and get a handle on it. However, if you had created an instance of it and you own that resource, then nobody else can get a handle on that resource. Therefore, the system keeps the object and owns the object, and all you get is a reference to the object. So let's try to see what does the audio system class provide. Well, it provides a mechanism to establish whether a particular resource is available. So, for example, not all machines have all the resources available on them. So one of the things that we would like to do first is, before we try to use a resource, we would like to establish the fact that such a resource exists. So the audio system class helps you there. Once we establish that a particular resource is available, as a matter of fact, a resource may be available in the system, but it might not be usable by you because somebody else might have been using it and therefore blocked the use of that resource. So once we establish the availability of the resource, the next thing is we want to get a reference to the object that encapsulates that resource. So a resource is a physical resource. So in order to manipulate it, we have to get a Java object that encapsulates that resource. That's the second step. Once we get an object that encapsulates a resource, all you have to do is call methods on that object to operate the resource that it's tied to. Another important source of sound data is a sound file, or more generally, a sample sound source defined by a URL. With the basic sound capability provided by the applet class, all we could do with the sound source was to create an audio clip object from it. The sound API is much more general in that it provides the audio input stream class to represent a stream that is source, that is a source of sampled sound data with a specific format. So what does an audio input stream input class represent? It represents a stream that is a source of sampled sound data with a specific format. Let's say we have a URL or even just a file. One of the things that we could do in the past was just create a clip out of it and say clip.play, and that's all you had control over it. Whereas with an audio stream input, we can associate audio input stream input with a URL or a file, and we can read the actual bytes that make up that particular stream. So we would read the bytes, and then we would write the bytes or the contents off the stream to a output stream. The output stream could be speaker, or you could be writing it over a socket so that you can send it off to a remote site where it can be played. So in addition to reading reading the data as bytes and writing it to output streams, the other thing that we can also do is we can convert its format. For example, if you are reading a format of a file formatted in such a way that you are not capable of processing it, then you could convert it to a format which you are capable of processing because you have the raw bytes that make up the file. And that's the power of the audio stream input class. There are 8 interfaces that make up the sample sound package. The figure in front of you describes 7 of them. The 8th interface, which is called a line listener interface, is one of those interfaces which is typically not used by regular programmers. It has some specific functionality which is used by low-level programmers. So we will only concentrate on the 7 interfaces that are shown in the figure. Let's go over each of these interfaces in terms of what their functionality is. The port interface defines operations that are specific to an external input or output port for audio data, or for example, a microphone or speaker connection are typical instances of a port. External input and output ports can also be accessed as source data lines or target data line objects. The mixer interface declares the methods for operations you can perform on a mixer, which, as we discussed, incorporates one or more lines that can be input to or output from the mixer. Thus, a mixer object can have source data line objects providing sound input to the mixer, and it will output sound data to one or more target data line objects. Thus, your program can read sound data from a target data line and write to a source data line. The clip object is a rather different kind of line, in that a clip encapsulates the sound data for an audio clip in memory. So unlike the data lines we talked about in this picture, clip is special in the sense that when you try to access a URL or a file, what you do is you take the entire file and store it in memory, and therefore there is no streaming of the file. So you would have a long startup time where the entire file is downloaded and stored in memory, and then the clip would be manipulated from there. And the advantage to this is that unlike the others where they happen to be a conduit of data, since the clip is already in memory, you can do anything like go to a particular location, rewind and fast forward through the clip and do all kinds of manipulation. The downside, however, is there are many applications where a clip is not a practical use. For example, if I was doing a video conferencing application, then you couldn't possibly get everything that is being said and store it as a clip because it's a continuously built stream of data. The other thing one has to realize about the difference between a clip and target data lines is that if you have a target data line, remember a target data line is something you read from. So if you have a target data line, and whether you read from it or not, the data keeps coming. So if the fact that you're not reading simply means that the data is being lost. Whereas with a clip, if you don't read, the data is still in memory, so it's not being lost. You can read anytime you want. So that's one of the important differences that you should keep in mind. Before we look at some examples that will make the use of the API much clearer, I want to talk about the resource descriptor classes. These are classes which do most of the work, but their role is kind of confusing. What they actually accomplish will become clear when I describe the example in the next page. For now, just understand that we have lines, data lines, mixers, and ports. These interfaces each have within them an inner class with the name info. Objects of these class types encapsulate data specifying an object of the corresponding type. So, for example, we have port.info. An object of type port.info specifies the characteristics of a particular kind of port. The data line.info and port.info classes are derived from line.info because they both describe kinds of line. A mixer is somewhat different kind of an animal in that a mixer.info class derives from the object directly. In order to understand the relevance of a resource descriptor class, we'll look at an example. So, why do we use a descriptor class? Well, in order to answer that question, we have to look at steps involved in playing audio. There are 5 steps, give or take a couple. Some of them are optional, so you could skip them. But there are 5 steps in playing audio using the Java API. First step is you create an instance of a line that specifies the format of the sound data you wish to play. This is where the descriptor class comes into play. So the idea here is let's say you have a URL or a file and you know what the format of the file is. The first thing you want to find out is you want to create an instance. You ask the system and ask it if it has an instance, if it can give you an instance of that particular format, so that if you have a line of that particular that supports that format, then you can start reading from that URL or start reading from the file. The second thing that we do is we get a reference to a line that supports this format. So first step is to be able to read from the source. Source of data, and so we first find out if we can get a target data line which supports the format of the file. The second step is get a physical resource, get a reference to a physical resource that supports this format so that we can play it on that physical resource. The third step is to create an audio stream that encapsulates the sound data. So once we've understood that this format is supportable, then the third step is saying, let's create the audio stream. And once we have the audio stream, then what we do is we tie the source of the data to the reference line, which is the physical object. So we have the source of the data, which is sample data, and we have a physical resource that is capable of playing this data. So we tie them together, and once we tie them together, all we have to say is play it and loop on it, or go to a specific location on it, or stop playing it. So I'm going to take 2 examples and compare them To get an idea what these two examples are, one is trying to play an audio as a clip. Remember, playing as a clip is to play it in memory. And the other is to play it as a stream, which means that you are continuously getting a stream of data which you read as bytes, sound bytes, and then we write them to output line that will play this audio on your system. The code that first we're going to look at is the clip code. So the first step I have, as we see in this code, is the first line has audio input stream. I'm defining audio input stream called source, and I'm saying audio input stream source equals audio system dot get audio input stream, and I'm giving it a file. So this is step three in our list that we saw just now. Step one is, as I said, to get a use the descriptor class and say, well, this is the format of the file. Can I get a clip? Can I get a clip that is capable of supporting this particular format? So the syntax, as you see, is I say data line dot info. This was the inner class I just talked about. Data line dot info, clip info is an instance of that, is equal to new data line dot info, and I say clip dot class. That tells us that I want to get a instance of clip that supports the format source.get format. That will tell you what the format of the source is. And the next step is I can optionally check and see if the audio system supports this particular clip info. As we see, step one is simply establishing the fact that Java as the system, as the API, is whether Java as an API is supporting this format. The next line, which is saying audio system dot is line supported, it's checking to see whether there's a physical resource that is capable of playing this particular format. So step one is checking the API, whether the API supports. Step two is checking whether the system has a physical resource that is capable of playing this particular format. And then within the loop, within the if condition, I have step four, which simply is tying the two together. That is, I got a handle on a physical resource that is supporting this format. I got the source, which is a file, and I already encapsulated it within the API, and so I'm tying the two together. So when I say new clip dot open source, all I'm doing is I'm telling the physical resource to open the source, which is a file, and start get ready to play it. And the next two steps, as you see, is I say clip dot loop, clip dot loop continuously, and then I can stop it. If I want to rewind it, I can say clip dot set frame position 0. What this does is it goes to the very beginning, and it's if I wanted to play it again, I could have played it again. And a clip dot close simply closes it. As we said, clip is good because you get everything in memory, but it's not practical in all cases. So let's look at how the same sequence of steps would work in the case of a stream. Again, we notice that the first thing that I'm doing is I'm jumping to step three, and I'm getting an audio input stream from a file. By the way, this parameter file could have been a URL and it would have worked just fine. And the next line is saying I'm getting the format from it by doing a new source.get format. And then I do step one, which is data line info, source info equals new data line info. Now, this time, instead of saying clip.class, I say source data line dot class, because right now I don't want to read this whole thing into memory. I want to get a source data line out of it. And again, what we are doing at in this particular case is, as I said, we always read from the target data line and write to the source data line. So when I get a source data line here, I'm saying that I want a instance, or I want to know if this particular format can be written or can be is supported in the system in terms of writing to a device. And then the next thing I do is check if that particular format, there's a device, a physical device in the system that supports this format. And then if it is supported, then I get a handle on it, which I call it source line. Once I get a handle on it, one of the things that we should remember is, since we don't have all the entire clip stored in memory, we need a buffer to store some bytes so that we have a smooth streaming. In fact, we need to store, as long as we have a whole number of frames that we buffer, we'll be in good shape. And that's what the buffer size here is doing. It's storing, it's saying what is the size of the buffer that I need in order to accomplish buffering so that I have a smooth play of the audio. So once I get that, I allocate space for that much buffer, and then I tie the two together, which is the physical resource and the file I want to play, which is done by the source line dot open format comma buffer size. And then once I'm done, I just use a while loop to continue to play the audio till I have data that I'm reading from the source. So you see, byte count is equal to source dot read is reading data from the source, and I say sound data comma zero sound data dot length, and this is reading from the source. And and if the byte count is minus one, obviously I've nothing to read, so I'm going to drain the source line, and I set playing equals flawless so that I can come out of the loop. And when I get some data, I write it into the buffer, which is sound data, and the buffer was already tied to the source line, and therefore whatever I write to the buffer gets played on the source line. By the way, there are a couple of things in this example that seem that should be clarified. What we see is we have the source line, which is really where we are writing our data to, and we have a source which we are reading stuff from, which is the input file. So the names are slightly confusing, but as long as we remember that we always write to a source and read from a target, we should be in good shape. Before we wrap up this treatment of sound API, let's take a look at MIDI in Java Sound. There's another topic which I'm not covering, which is recording of sound in using Java Sound API. Well, the concepts are very similar to playing audio. The only difference is that instead of using source data lines, I mean, instead of using data lines which are tied to files, we use the microphone as our source, and we start reading from the microphone, and you could possibly write it to a file, or you could even stream it across to another machine. So that's the only difference. So we're not going to repeat the same thing. However, MIDI is slightly more interesting because there is a support for MIDI in Java, and I'm going to try and explain that. As we saw before, data is in a MIDI file is a series of commands that defines a piece of music. Up to 16 MIDI channels are available, so each instrument uses one channel, which means that you can play 16 instruments simultaneously with the MIDI standard. The way MIDI works is we have the use of two entities. One is called a synthesizer, and the other is a sequencer. The electronics that can reproduce the sound from a variety of different musical instruments in response to MIDI commands is called a MIDI synthesizer. In other words, what a MIDI synthesizer does is it takes a bunch of commands and it has the internal electronics to generate what is the sound that has to be played in response to these commands. In most cases, a synthesizer would probably be implemented in hardware as a part of the sound card. In the case of Java Sound, there is a software implementation of the synthesizer. The other entity is a sequencer. A sequencer can be again a software or hardware, but it does something more, much more different. That is, a sequencer is a device that processes a sequence, a MIDI sequence, that is a whole sequence of commands in order to play it on a synthesizer. So the synthesizer just gets the commands not from a programmer, but this entity gets its commands from the sequencer. The sequencer is the one that looks at the file as a bunch of commands and in turn interprets these commands. In fact, that's what it is. It's an interpreter. It interprets these commands and then sends the low-level commands to the synthesizer so that the synthesizer can synthesize the sound that you want to play. A device conforming to the general MIDI specification must provide some functionalities. That is, it should provide a minimum of 128 preset instruments plus 47 percussive sounds. That's a pretty rich ensemble of instruments. And it also should provide a minimum of 16 simultaneous timbres or 16 simultaneous instruments, which is also related to the 16 MIDI channels which we talked about. It has to provide a minimum of 24 simultaneous voices where each voice is a note of given velocity or loudness for any of the available instruments and percussive sounds. So, what we're trying to get at through this definition of the specification is that when we say that Java Sound supports the MIDI standard, we're saying that it supports this MIDI specification, where it supports 128 a minimum of 128 preset instruments, including 47 percussive sounds. It supports 16 simultaneous instruments playing, and it supports 24 simultaneous voices being played. As I just talked about, the MIDI standard is implemented in Java using the concepts of a sequencer and a synthesizer, and the relationship between a general MIDI device and a sequencer and synthesizer is given in the figure ahead of you. Now that we understand what a sequencer is and what a synthesizer is, we can take a look at a simple pseudocode or simple code snippet that shows how we can use these entities in order to play a MIDI file. As a matter of fact, to play a MIDI file, you don't need to access a synthesizer directly. All you need to access is a sequencer, and the sequencer will in turn read the MIDI file and send the commands to the synthesizer for you. You might be wondering, when will you ever want to write a program, or when will you be ever required to write a program using the synthesizer? Well, if you were trying to selectively manipulate the audio, for example, if you had a piece of music and you wanted to disable, let's say, one particular instrument, then you would have to get control of the synthesizer, because what you would be doing is you would be selectively muting one of those devices, and which means that you're telling the synthesizer not to synthesize that particular instrument and synthesize all other instruments. That's just one example. As a matter of fact, the examples on the website do give you one case where manipulating the synthesizer is demonstrated. So let's look at the steps in playing a MIDI file. The first step is we get a reference to a sequencer. How do you do that? Just like we had the class audio system, we have a class called MIDI system. And we say MIDI system.getSequencer, and we get a reference to the sequencer. We open the sequencer using sequencer.open, and then we tie the sequencer to a file. So we say sequence.midisystem.getSequenceMidiFile. Well, before we tie it, what step 3 is really doing is we're using the MIDI system again to get a file and create a sequence out of it. So it says MIDI system.getSequence, name of the file, and it's returned a sequence. As a matter of fact, here we are saying file, but it could be a URL also. So now that we have a sequence and we have the physical resource, which is the sequencer, we connect the two, or we link the two, by using the command sequencer.setSequence and pass it the sequence that you wanted to for it to sequence. And the last step is we start playing it by using sequencer.start. Once again, the possible operations on the sequencer are to start it, stop it, loop on it, and things like that. If you need finer control, if you need greater control of the MIDI file, as I said, selectively disabling instruments or selectively changing the synthesis or sound of a particular instrument, maybe play it on a higher note or something, then you would have to get control of the synthesizer. One final note regarding this lesson. As you saw, I have demonstrated a few examples and some code snippets. And what I would like to urge you to do is to look at the full example, which is on the website, and try out these programs, play around with them, modify them, and get a better understanding of what we mean when I say you get a handle on a resource, you get the media file, handle on the media file, you tie the two together and you start playing them. This will become much clearer if you look at the examples in their entirety and look at a few variations on the same theme. And also the chapter which I extracted most of the material and the examples is available through the website, and you should be able to read the chapter and get a clear understanding of the Sound API.